Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are so glad you're here with us.
Yes, we are. You know what? Thanks for hanging out with us. We'd love for you to join the conversation. Log on to Facebook.com/The Music Row Show. Are you on The Music Row Show Facebook right now, Hino?
Absolutely.
Okay, because, you know, we want to get you in this conversation. Not you, Hino.
Yeah.
We want our listeners
want me
to get in the conversation.
Yeah. Boy, oh boy.
Hey, remember, you can always listen to past shows by clicking the podcast page on themusicrowshow.com. And isn't there some, I don't know, are we on some other things?
We are. We're on Instagram and YouTube, and of course, you know, themusicrowshow.com. We're always on that.
Do we have themusicrowshow.com?
Yes, we do.
Oh, how's that going?
What do you mean? You're acting like we don't have a website, knucklehead.
What? I'm on it all the time.
Of course you are.
Yes,
I am. Admiring yourself on the website. It's like, wow, look at that handsome guy.
That's a good-looking man
right there.
That's right. Hino, who do we have with us here this hour?
Well, I tell you what, we are being joined this hour by hit songwriter and recording artist Paul Jefferson. As a recording artist, he's had hits with songs like I Might Just Make It and Check Please. As a writer, he's had his songs recorded by the greats like Keith Urban, You're Not My God, which is a great song, by the way. Buddy Jewell, Aaron Tippin, who had a number one with his That's As Close As I'll Get to Loving You. And a lot of people might not know this, but Paul is also the homelier half of a duo called The Jeffersons, which he shares with his wife, Lisa Brokop. Mm-hmm. And actually another group called Hilljack, yeah, which we're definitely going to be talking about. So we're lots to talk about. We're delighted to say Paul Jefferson, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Wow.
Thank you. Right.
Yeah. If it makes you feel any better.
Can clapping.
You're the more attractive member of Hilljack.
Yeah. Look at that.
I can't see. I can't tell. It's all subjective. Come on.
So so many of our past guests, so many have the same story. Songwriters via college degree in engineering.
Oh, sure.
Just so many of them.
Absolutely.
So many. And here you're just another one of the...
Yeah, it's strange.
The many engineers. What kind of engineering?
Like I say, I'm from the country music capital of the world, San Francisco, California.
Right,
And I also went to University of California, Berkeley, and majored in biomedical engineering.
Right.
So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
What rhymes with
biomedical?
I can't. Yeah. That was the problem. That's why I couldn't stay in the curriculum.
Okay, so what were you thinking doing that? And what?
I'll tell you, I was trying to find a way out.
Okay,
I got the bug early. My father was a guitar teacher, and actually, mm-hmm, he had. Aha. I guess I kind of, as much as I didn't want to, as much as I wish I could be something other than my father, I ended up doing a lot of the same stuff. He was a engineer from Stanford University, and ended up being a guitar teacher, and he did pretty well doing that in the Bay Area there. And so I got started early playing, mm-hmm, you know, folk music, and I got the bug. But I kept, you know, as much as my father pushed me into it, he also would always tell me that it's a terrible business. It's a difficult, lonely, despicable business.
Despicable.
So don't do it.
Now, are we talking about biomedical engineering?
No, we're talking about the music business. So I kept trying to do something other than music.
I see.
And I couldn't get over the wall.
Yeah.
I tried a lot of different things.
I would think biomedical engineering might be a little lonelier than playing guitar.
It's kind of a lonely thing. But
the groupies for biomedical engineering.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, I call my buddies now. You know, I talk to some of my old college mates from back then, and they're doing pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah. But they always want to hear about what's going on in my life, you know? It's a funny thing. There's definitely at least the facade of there being more glamour in this business, in the music business,
right.
But little do they know that it, you know. Look at you beautiful guys right here.
Right.
There's a lot of glamour in being able to pay all your bills without thinking about it.
That is
it,
a beautiful
know?
Thing.
That is hot right there.
Yeah, yeah. That's very attractive.
Yeah. Oh, man. So I understand that hit songwriter Stephen McClintock was instrumental in bringing you to Nashville. Tell us about that.
Do you know Steve? Stephen? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, San Francisco is an odd place. in the music scene, because it's kind of a, it's got its own little bubble. At least this is my opinion of it. And I was doing all right there playing country music. I was kind of an oddball, you know, right, in San Francisco playing. And I thought I was special. I thought I was, you know, unique in country music in San Francisco. And I didn't think I needed to come to Nashville. I didn't think I needed Nashville to have a career, mm-hmm, you know? So, and I think a lot of musicians in San Francisco think that way, but, it just so happens that Steve McClintock was at a show I played at and heard me and said, you got to come down to Los Angeles. And Los Angeles, so I went down there and met up with him, and we got, you know, signed stuff and wrote and recorded and stuff. And Los Angeles has a much better connection with Nashville. So I got to Nashville through Los Angeles.
Okay.
But that's how I met Steve.
Yeah, but he brought you to town.
He brought me to town. Yeah. And, you know, it's a funny thing that we came here to Nashville. When I got off the plane to Nashville, this is like 93, I think. It's
right,
almost 21 years ago. I got off the plane and I thought for sure they're going to, you know, check you at the gate and say, I see you have a guitar. Are you a songwriter?
We're not letting anybody in
with a guitar anymore. But everybody was so kind, you know, it was such a welcoming city. And we got to the hotel, Steve and I did, and, you know, we just really tired. We'd actually been playing shows in Los Angeles and stuff, and got to Nashville tired. He calls up one of his buddies, Jeff Pearson, who used to do the Sunday night at the Bluebird.
Right.
And he did that for years.
Oh, yeah, I remember Jeff.
And they had he moved away. He's back again. He lives back in Nashville, but he had an opening that night. So I was not in Nashville 20 minutes before I was on the Bluebird stage.
Wow.
And I always figured that that's the way it goes in Nashville.
Sure.
You know, it's just, you get here, and years later, I became more, you know, I played Bluebird hundreds and hundreds of times, and I became friends with them, and I was asked to do some of the judging of the songwriters that have to go through the process.
Oh, boy.
Right.
And you know what that's like.
Oh, yeah.
And I could not believe it. I was shocked. It was a mind-blowing experience to see what people really had to go through, what I probably would have had to go through.
Yeah.
And what I probably should have gone through, but it was something.
But you got your first record deal and your first cut by later that same evening, right? I mean,
pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And the check was in the mailbox.
And the check was in the mailbox. Right.
Yeah. Right.
Wow. Yeah.
No, it can happen fast, but not that fast.
Yeah.
Well, and so you answered the first part of my three-part question, okay, which was, what was your first writer's night, which was the Bluebird, 20 minutes after you got here.
Yeah, so we're done for the hour.
Thanks a lot.
What was your first job once you decided to move here? Because, you know, you had to do something to pay some bills, right? Or just started writing.
I got a publishing deal.
The next day.
I had a publishing deal actually before I came.
You're killing me.
No, I know. It's not. It was all downhill after that.
Yeah, after that it was downhill. Just a number one hit.
No, there's a lot of good things happen.
That's fantastic.
I was very fortunate that, and I've had publishing deals ever since, up until about 5 years ago.
So, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Wow, that's pretty amazing. Well, I understand that when you were first here, you had some pretty interesting ways of networking. You did a lot of networking events. You had this a black party, I think, or were you several.
How did you know about this?
I know things. I know people. Talk about that and how you networked
party.
When you first got
oh
here.
Oh my God, that is you guys are shocking me. I didn't get the memo. I was renting a room from Steve at his. He bought a house here, and we one day it was Halloween day, and we said we need to. Let's have a party tonight.
Yeah.
It was that back in those days, you know, when I wasn't married and didn't have, we could just think of this things on spur of the moment.
Yeah,
so that same day we decided that we're going to have a party, and we started to invite everybody. So we can't get people to do costumes. It's too late last minute. So we just said, wear black.
Okay.
And it was unbelievable how packed the party was, a huge party, and it became a tradition.
Yep.
But it was, you know, the first one's always the best.
Oh yeah,
and then the black party really starts to get dark. By the second, third year, it starts to the reputation starts to outdo itself.
Appreciate
but anyway,
itself.
It was a good time. It was a lot of good times.
But there's a lot of networking.
Yeah, it was a lot of networking. Yeah.
Yeah,
we invited a lot of the people that we knew and were meeting, and we'd get drunk.
Always good.
Now, was that the same house that, Doak ended up doing?
Yeah,
the,
Doak.
Third
Sunday.
And I think y'all used to like record there.
Did
you,
we
did show
there
shows at
the
house?
There.
Yeah,
yeah.
I lived in
the
house.
At the Guitar BBQ. Wow. Yeah.
That was my house.
That's crazy.
I lived there by myself.
We know it well.
So, okay, so you got here. Now, when you were in San Francisco, were you co-writing then? Or was, did that something that
Not
happened
Not so much.
Here?
I just started. No, I didn't co-write. And then I when I got to Nashville, it was very difficult to not co-write.
Right.
Always going into a room with somebody, and no matter what idea, when you think you start a song, you think, well, I'm going to keep this for myself. I'm going to finish this by myself. And you get into a room and there's silence, and you think, well, let me show you something I got.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I not much co-write, not much, you know, self-writing.
So what do you think? What do you think now? What are your strengths and weaknesses as a co-writer?
I don't
and
know.
And how has that maybe evolved?
Pretty much weak on everything. I'll tell you, the music part,
and the lyrics.
Yes. Which comes first? I think my strength, and it's been different on different songs. But one of the things I love to do when I'm songwriting is paraphrase. I think I'm a really good paraphraser. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's basically I can tell you what I think should be said. I'm not going to tell you how it's. I can't always say how it's going to be said or if it's going to rhyme. But I have a pretty good sense about what should be said.
Okay.
And you can notice how confident I'm with that.
You are. You are. you're very much letting
I'm sorry to interrupt. Listener Mark just messaged in, and he
oh, just say who
Mark.
It is. It's
we're
Mark Allen Barnett.
We're supposed to ask about Susan. Tell us about Susan, darn it.
Oh, Susan, yeah. Maybe I'll have to play that song for you. But am I going to play a song?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, absolutely.
Well, I'm going to play that song.
Are you going to play
the song,
Susan?
We're getting a nice audience here.
Wow.
Can you all hear me out there? Can
yeah,
you
they
hear
can.
Us?
Yeah, they can hear you. Absolutely.
Well, I dated a woman named Susan. Actually, the truth is I dated two women.
Ooh.
Not at the same time. One right after another. Both named Susan.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both nuts.
Okay.
So I literally developed a prejudice against all women named Susan.
Right.
How could you not?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I have the song is I'll have to play it for you, but it's about having a prejudice against
Cannot wait to hear that.
The name Susan.
Wow.
And Mark Allen, shout out to him. He's the one who set this up tonight. So
yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Mark, for doing that.
Good old Mark.
Yeah. It's one of his favorite songs.
Speaking of nuts.
He's
No, we love Mark.
Of course.
But your wife, Lisa, and you write
Not
together.
Susan. Her name is Lisa. Exactly.
You graduated to Lisa.
Yes.
After Susan.
Yeah.
When did you guys start writing and recording together?
We actually were set up to write. That's how we met. So
you were set
long,
up.
Yeah, we
to
were
be
set,
set
up.
Up.
Yeah, I thought we were writing, but apparently her friend, her best friend, who was the wife of the guitar player Neil Jack, they were setting us up.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know, but
she knew.
I think she knew. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
She knew. But how long ago was that? Lisa, can you call in and tell me?
That was March 13th. No,
yeah.
We don't know.
2 p.m.
It's been 8, 9 years maybe. It's been a long time.
Wow.
We've been together a while now. Yeah, nine years, I think. Maybe 8 years.
But so it was the whole co-writing thing, that was a pretense to get you guys together.
Yeah, and then we haven't done much co-writing since then, a little bit here and there, but she has her people that she really does well with, and I have mine, and... you'd think that we would do that more, but you know, with a little girl now, we have a daughter, 4-year-old daughter at home, and
is it Ivy?
Ivy, yeah.
Fantastic! Congratulations.
Thank you. She's a good one.
So, what are you going to tell Ivy? Because you know, you got Lisa, who, by the way, we're talking about names, and you dated a girl whose last name was Broke Up.
Yeah,
that's kind of scary, man.
Yeah,
I'm just saying,
it's kind of an omen, sort of.
What an amazing singer she is.
Yeah,
I'm a fan.
Yeah,
yeah.
She's one of those. I was kind of a fan of hers before I met her. You know, so that's one of those things. But she is still. I mean, she's very well respected in Nashville, but she is huge in Canada.
Yeah,
yeah. She still can pack them in up there. So
what do you tell Ivy? Who's 4 years old now, 13 years from now, when she says,
Who are you people?
No.
why you?
Not my daddy?
No, when she says, I'm doing this, I want to...
I lock the door. I say, yeah. You're not leaving this room.
I want to be a musician.
And I say, no. Mm-hmm.
But Dad, it's in me.
No, it's not.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. But we're going to be back with a whole lot more of hit songwriter Paul Jefferson here on the Music Row Show.
That's fair.
Show. Our guest this hour is hit songwriter Paul Jefferson, and that is his new project called Hill Jack, and that's a tune called Bigger Than Dallas. That's great. Here,
relatively new.
Yeah,
you know, relatively new.
This decade,
to the dawn of man. I mean, that's
it's the CD he brought.
Okay, it's new to me. Exactly. I never saw this CD before tonight.
Yeah. Well, it sounds new.
Who knew?
Yeah, okay. Well, we're really glad you're here, and we really feel like since you know we were getting text heckled by Mark Allen Barnett, yeah. We should get you to do Susan.
Okay, we'll do that.
Yeah.
A friend came knocking on the same dang door Susan walked out a week before. He said, I heard you were down and needed some cheering up. He said, there's someone I want you to meet. She's smart, pretty, and sweet. I said, I'm game as long as her name's not Susan. Susan's hurt me. They love to hate me. They always cut my heart out with an old rusty spoon. I've held just one girl with that name. Now I'm holding them all to blame. Yeah, get me anyone as long as her name's not Susan. He said, this girl's eyes are blue. I said, Susan had eyes too. And that might be a problem for me down the road. Oh, but bring her by and I'll take her out. As long as we don't have to leave the house. Don't want to run into anyone named Susan. Susan's hurt me. They love to hate me. They always cut my heart out with an old rusty spoon. I've held just one girl with that name. Now I'm holding them all to blame. You pitch me anyone as long as her name's not Susan. To toss me anyone as long as her name's not Susan. No, not Susan. No, not Susan.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's a Susan.
There's
a Susan in
there. We have a Susan in the crowd. And yeah,
but Susan,
hey, by the way,
Susans usually really like that song. I don't know why, but they do.
This segment is brought to you by the Susan B. Anthony Foundation, by the way. We'd like you all to donate a dollar.
And you actually coined a new phrase tonight, Scott. I'm very proud of you. Text heckled. I'm going to have to write that
text heckled.
I'm going to have to write that one down.
Text heckled.
Oh, that is awesome. So talk about the transition of going from songwriter to bona fide recording artist. How does that change your creative thinking and how you approach your craft?
Well, that's interesting. Do you have an easier question? Because I'm not sure I can answer that.
What did you have for breakfast today?
Yeah.
Well, there's
two different Susans, so I'll protect their.
It's probably best. Give them the anonymity.
The guilt. No, actually, the truth about those Susans is that after some years of therapy, I realized that I'm the one that was the problem.
No.
They're fine.
Come on, no.
Susans are great.
Okay. Yeah. That's funny. Well, it struck a chord with some folks in the audience. Listener Michael says that he can really, really relate to that Susan
you know
song.
What?
Wants to know if it's online anywhere.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Reverb Nation, YouTube.
Lots of play. YouTube. I think it's YouTube, but it may not be on YouTube. But it's on iTunes and.
Okay, there you go.
Reverb Nation. All this.
iTunes. Look up Paul
iTunes,
Jefferson.
Yeah, and.
Or is it in? Is it a Hilljack song?
CD Baby, I think it's on CD Baby too.
Sweet.
Do you guys talk about that?
Sure. Yeah. It's called plugging. Go right.
Yeah.
Shamelessly.
But it's Hilljack is the name of the band that well, we haven't really talked about that. But
oh, we're gone.
We probably won't.
Oh, we're gone.
That's the name
we probably
of the band.
Not after that song.
Yeah.
My mom's name was Susan.
Well, she,
no, I'm just kidding.
No, Susans really actually do like seem to because it's you know they Susans are. Attention getter drama queens, right? So the song is just the fact that it's about them.
Yeah.
Obviously.
And the Rusty Spoon.
But I have to say that I've, in all the, you know, in the years that I've been playing that song, I've had people come up and say, just what that guy said. What was, he said, I get that. I know what you mean.
Yeah,
I know what you mean about the Susans. And I would say, you know, so tell me, what is your Susan? You know, what's the name that you have trouble with? You know, what, mm-hmm. woman has come up in your life and what prejudice and they say no, what do you mean
it's Susan
yeah.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Word to the wise.
So okay, let's talk
back to that question.
There was a question.
You know, when you went from full-time songwriter to recording artist, how does that you know,
well, I mean, I was
you're writing from a different place. I came
to Nashville to be an entertainer, to be to do the singing thing, you know?
Right.
And then the first song I had cut was with Aaron Tippin, mm-hmm. and it was went to number one, and so I liked that. That was a really nice
thing
to
like.
Do to walk to the mailbox and not have to do anything else. But so I concentrated on that a lot, just on the songwriting. But then it wasn't long after that I got a record deal and had to go back into that entertainment thing. Which
mm-hmm.
so it's I mean I'm you know I'm. I've tried whatever I can, however I can make a buck is
I guess. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's
the Nashville way. Let's talk about that big hit. That's as close as I'll get to loving you. Talk about writing it. Do you know how it got to Aaron? And then I was watching that video and I'm just kind of wondering the first time you saw that video, what was your thought process?
There's a lot of stories behind that song.
Well, come on.
We got time. We've got a whole lot of time.
We got plenty of time.
And I hope, I mean, am I being helpful to your?
Yes,
to
we're having a great time.
No,
because you guys have a certain theme of your show, and I hope I'm not taking you off your.
No,
theme,
you're doing great.
My second management deal was with Miles Copeland, who was Sting. You know, managed the Police, and he had some other acts and had record labels and stuff, and he had a castle in France that he would invite people from all over the world to come write. And you may have heard of that. He did it for 10 years, I think, almost.
Yeah. Never got the invite.
My invitation got lost in the mail.
Yeah,
so.
Never.
Well, mm-hmm. there was a lot of my good friends in Nashville I met at that castle.
Really?
It's a strange thing. But anyway, so I went to that. The first time I went to the castle in France to write with all these songwriters from all over the world, it was nerve-wracking.
Can I just stop you for a minute?
Sure.
I want you to think about that sentence you just said. The first time I went to the castle in France to write with songwriters from all over the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
The life you've lived. I tell you what.
11 times.
Wow. They make me write in a dungeon.
I know. Well, I think maybe I did that. For real.
Okay, go ahead. Proceed. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so it was nerve-wracking. This is a nerve-wracking experience because some of these songwriters are real top, you know, I got to write with Timothy Schmidt there from the Eagles.
Man. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
John Bon Jovi. And I mean, the list goes on and on. But anyway, this guy I was writing with was some, he was a kind of a star in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't speak English very well, but we wrote that song together and we did it really fast. We had it written and I put it down on a, we put it down on a CD, which, I mean, not a CD, a cassette. Which I don't know if anybody knows what that is, but that we put it on a cassette and I completely forgot about it. And I, you know, back then I was drinking a lot, so I proceeded to drink the wine that just like came out of the water fountain there. And I had completely forgotten about that song. And when I came back to Nashville, my publisher at the time was Wyatt Easterling. He pulled out a bunch of the songs that were written at the castle that I, that I'd written, and said, let's demo these songs. So he pulled that, that song out and we listened to it. And I thought, that's, I don't know, Wyatt, it's, I mean, it's the, you know, the cassette sounded lousy and we just, you know, we're all drunk, whatever it is. And then the band listened to it and they said, yeah, we could do this. And this drummer, I don't know if you, this is a team drummer here in Nashville, Steve Brewster is a just awesome drummer.
Yeah.
He just, he kicks into that thing, boom, boom, back up, boom, boom, like this. And I just, I was in the vocal booth and I went, holy cow, this is a song. And, I just, and it, anyway, I was just
That's
shocked how it went from that to that. Well, I got pitched to Joe Galante and he liked it, which, you know, which means it's going to get cut.
Right. Yeah, that's a big deal right there. Yeah,
he really liked this. I don't, he had a obsession about it, which is we had that going for us. So he pitched it to Clint Black, and pretty much Clint Black wouldn't do it. And he pitched it to Aaron Tippin. Aaron Tippin wouldn't do it.
Huh.
And then Joe Galante basically said, I think, I'm this is, you know, speculation, but he just said, you have to do it. Because Aaron's career, he'd had a couple songs, I think, not do so well. So he was on the fence there.
Right.
And so he pretty much forced him to do it. Aaron didn't really want to do it. And the rest of he forced him to do it.
How does he feel about it now?
He likes it.
Yeah. So you see the video for the first time.
Yeah.
And you're
thinking, that's another story with that.
Let's hear the story.
Oh, okay.
Because I was.
Here's a good story.
Just to be sure, I saw it right. I had to watch it like 4 or 5 times today, you know.
It's very sensual. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah.
You know,
if you want to put it that way.
It's a sexy video.
It's a saucy video.
It's saucy, yeah. Yeah, it's very sexy. But I used to play at the Bluebird a lot with Keith Urban. We'd play almost every weekend. You know, we played night after night. But anyway, we were playing a show at the Bluebird one night. This is before Keith Urban was Keith Urban.
Right, right.
And we were playing in a round with Monty Powell, who's still a big writer with Keith. And Monty had this silly idea. He thought, "But let's I thought it was silly at the time. I thought it was ridiculous, but I went ahead with it. He said, we're going to have a bucket of song themes, and we're going to pick it out. Like, one's going to be just your artsy song, you know. Mm-hmm. One's going to be a heartbreak song. One's an up-tempo novelty song. I can't remember all the.
Oh, what a great idea.
All
that's
the
neat.
Things.
I like that.
So we'd have to go around and play that thing. And one of the things, one of the pieces of paper was your number one song, which he, at that time, he was the only one. It was a joke. He was the only one that had a number one song. So we pull out our number one song and we couldn't play, right? That was the joke. So we just picked the song. And this song, that's as close, that was the one I played.
Mm-hmm.
And it had not even been recorded yet.
And then it became
a number one song.
Aha.
That's crazy.
I love it.
But then, actually, it had been, I'm sorry, that's not correct. It had been recorded, but it hadn't come out yet.
Okay.
They had been recorded, and they had made the video. And the guy that plays the husband was in the audience.
Really?
He had no idea that I was going to play that song. But that's just one of these things that happens
in
Nashville.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Huh.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that happens in Nashville
all the time. Remember all those times that's happened to us, I know?
All the time.
All the time.
I used to play.
Listen, you guys are playing like you don't know what's going on. Let me tell you, folks. These guys are professors now. with all the great people you've had here, Jim Shearer, that guy, man, he's a
Oh, yeah.
You'd think we'd be better everywhere. At this by yeah. now, though, you know?
I think you are. I think you're just pulling it. I think you're pulling it.
Nobody's
over
ever invited me to play at a castle in
France and yeah. drink wine out of the water spigot.
Yeah. I played with Keith Urban all the time, too, on my CD player. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to talk more about other things.
Absolutely. Okay. You're listening to the Music Row Show. We're here with hit songwriter Paul Jefferson.
When you moved on so fast. Your picture lingered in my heart, but you did not look back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with hit songwriter Paul Jefferson, and that's a song off of one of his projects called Hill Jack, and the song is called Texas 101.
No, that's not Texas 101. This isn't Texas 101.
It's not Texas 101? No. What is that?
That's You Think About Me.
You Think About Me. That's what I meant to say. Yeah. You Think About Me.
Yeah. It's okay.
We're just going to let it fade all the way out.
We're here with Paul Jefferson. We're having a very good time. And, you know, we were talking a little bit about Keith Urban. And let me ask you something. Talk about that weird wonderfulness that only, you know, that happens in only a few cities here where in this country where when a buddy, a co-writer, someone that Keith is my Tuesday right. He's my Tuesday right. That's what he is. And then we play the Bluebird.
Yeah.
When you go from that to superstar, and the question is actually more logistically speaking, how does that change logistically? Because all of a sudden they have no control of their schedule and calendar.
Oh, Lordy, that's a good question. Should I answer that honestly?
Yes.
Yeah, why not? Well, it's just us.
Keith and I were managed by the same person.
Okay.
And so... he might not have felt that, but I felt like there was a competition, a healthy competition between us.
Mm-hmm.
And we both got deals at the same time, and we both were launched at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
My deal kind of went up, and what's that rocket that came back down to Earth really quickly? And anyway, and his stumbled a little bit. His
right.
took a, you know, there were some technical difficulties, but. He just went into the outer space,
right?
And it did change. We did not speak very much. I see him around town. We don't write anymore. You know, mm-hmm. so it's I. You know, it took. There was some resentment for a while, but I mean, it's not due. It's nothing to do with him. He's
right.
He's done awesome, and now I'm very happy. You know, when I see him, I'm just happy for him. And I see him, he's been so nice to me. And he the song we wrote and he cut, you know, on his Golden Roads album, You're Not My God.
Yeah.
I just recorded that song and he came and played banjo on it. The banjo.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's right.
Yeah.
I heard it.
That's awesome.
So, which was great. I mean, just a nice thing for him to do. And I think, you know,
Talk about that song. Because Hino, he was telling me about that song quite a while ago. So I know that you...
Well, Keith, you know, Keith, both Keith and I have had struggles with addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And Keith has been very open about it, and I'm starting to be open about it. But we both have many years of sobriety now. But we wrote that song basically in a session of some kind of a therapist or somebody said that addiction is similar to worship, only you're worshiping your addiction. Some of the rituals that people do, mm-hmm. you know, are similar. So anyway, that the idea to say you're not my God is a song speaking to the addiction.
Right.
Ah, okay.
And so, you're not a real God. You're a fake God.
That's right.
What that song's about. So that was a song that was near and dear to both of our hearts, I think. And, I was going to say, after he played on my version of it,
mm-hmm.
and we got in the car with my wife, Lisa Rokop, my wife, and I looked at her and I said, you know, if I had that kind of money, I'd be good looking too. And then she didn't say anything.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. You probably started some.
Yeah. I was hoping. I was fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. You wanted her to say, oh, honey.
What's a good wife supposed to say?
She's supposed to say, oh, you're good looking. You're so handsome.
But there's really nothing she could say. Yeah. Because she goes, you know, no, there's no amount of money that could make you look
better looking.
You know, it's a tough one. But
yeah.
I put it on the spot.
Oh, man.
Darn.
So then going back to the, it doesn't necessarily have to be Keith Urban, but I mean, if you have a friend who's a big recording artist, what's the etiquette there? Just because you're friends doesn't mean you'd be throwing them songs all the time. What's the etiquette there?
That's a great question. I probably could have pitched more songs to Keith than I have, and I never have. I've never pitched other songs to him. I have another good friend, Porter Howell from Little Texas, the guy that actually I started Hill Jack with, and half those songs on there are written with him, and we're still really good friends. And the Texas 101 was actually cut by Little Texas. I pitch songs to him all the time. You know, I have that kind of relationship with him.
Okay.
But the etiquette, that's a tough one. It depends on the, and I may not be the one to answer that question because I think I probably error too far on the side of not pitching when I could pitch to people, but
just to not damage any relationships. Yeah.
Sometimes it comes up. Sometimes they'll ask for it, you know, and you gotta be ready to ride. You know, when they're ready, when they say something about a song that they want to cut, you gotta have that thing saddled up, ready to go.
Right.
Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
So you walk around basically wearing coats that can fit lots of CDs, and you just pull them out at any given moment.
As soon as they mention something.
Funny you should ask.
Yeah. But that's a great, I mean, that's you know, one of the main ways you get cuts now is to write with the artist.
Right.
So.
All right. Well, let's take one last break, and then when we come back, maybe we can get one more song out.
Sure.
Here.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Cool. You're listening to The Music Row Show. We're here with Paul Jefferson. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hold down, I hope you're feeling strong. $2 still buys you a beer and a song.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with hit songwriter Paul Jefferson. That's a tune called Throw Down, Ho Down off of his Hill Jack project. That's funny. I love that.
Yeah.
He just says, yeah.
I can't hear what's on. If it's on, is it faded out now?
Okay. Yeah, it's faded out now. Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote that song with Mark Hudson. You know who that is? He's got wrote all.
Yes.
With Aerosmith and everything.
I love Mark Hudson.
Yeah.
At the Castle, wrote this.
Of course.
Oh my gosh.
Of course. Yeah.
I've had it with this castle.
Yeah, you didn't go slumming and ride at the chateau that time. You just
actually, that was a chateau.
See.
Okay. They call it a chateau. Yeah.
Why don't you play us another song?
Yeah, play us a song before we hit you with something.
Well, this is the song I was just talking about, the You're Not My God.
Mm-hmm.
My song that I wrote with Keith. It's just a piece of paper. It says in God we trust. A little felt good. And a lot was not enough. Everybody loved me when I was on the roll. Yeah, I thought I had it all when I held the gold. But you're not my God. You're not my friend. You're not the one I will walk with in the end. You're not the truth. You're a temporary shot, and you ruin people's lives, and you don't give a second thought. You're not my God. Little white lines on a mirror, cut neatly into rows. Medicine that lied to me about who's in control. I thought you were the answer to all my despair.
You almost put me under, but I'm still breathing air. And you're not my God, you're not my friend, you're not the one I will walk with in the end. You're not the truth, you're a temporary shot, and you ruin people's lives and you don't give a second thought. You're not my God, you're not my God. Ooh. Around each turn a sweet voice promised me escape, and hiding in that pretty face was another heartache. Some call you a weakness, and some call you a sin. But call yourself what you want, I know what you've been. You're not my God, you're not my friend. Oh, you're not the one I will walk with in the end. You're not the truth, you're a temporary shot, and you ruin people's lives, and you don't give a second thought. You're not my God, you're not my God, you're not my God.
Wow. Wow. Very nice.
Thank you. I forgot I had my that you were filming this.
Yeah. Great. You would have worn pants.
I would have done my little dance that goes along.
That's best.
Oh,
that,
well,
we can,
you know, that's for the after show.
So you've been around here over 20 years. Done the solo artist, the band, the duo with your wife. What advice, when you first came to town, what advice given to you would not apply today? Because there's been a lot of shifts in this town, right? A lot of shifts in the industry.
Yeah.
So what were some great, what's some great advice you were given that would not even...
God, that's a really good question. What advice was I given?
Thank you.
That's a good question. I don't think I can answer it, but that's a good question.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Good one, Scott.
Thank you. Thank
Stump
you.
The guest.
I don't know if I can answer that in a constructive way. Let me think. There's some advice that was given to me that I think most of the advice that was given to me still applies.
Okay.
I just didn't take it.
Oh, there's that.
Well, who does take advice?
I mean, there's things like, when I, you know, there was a song I wrote that I wanted for myself, and then it was pitched to somebody, and then someone wanted to cut it, and I said, no, bad idea.
Okay.
Because that person...
Yeah, if you think... I mean, a lot of times I see that in young songwriters. They write a song for themselves, and they want to keep it for their solo, for their career, which is great. But, man, if there's someone wants to cut that song, let it go.
Yeah.
Just the opportunities are so few, and, you know, you can't take a gamble with that.
And there's always the chance that that person goes off and becomes huge.
Yeah,
and
that can only help your career.
Right.
The other thing I could say is this. I have to give an example. I don't have a lot of time here. One of the things that Miles Copeland said, he said to me, he said, Paul, you need to do something different. You need to stand out. I think you should wear a top hat. Yeah.
Okay.
And I thought that was the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And I really... almost fired him as my manager for saying that. Well, I never did. I tried to do some other things. But thinking back on that, I can see his point. I can see where you just don't know what it's going to look like. I thought I was going to come to Nashville and wear a cowboy hat and cowboy boots. And and it's just, it doesn't quite work out the way you think it is a lot of times. And that you know, another thing I'd tell you is there's always an exception to that rule. Some person might come to town and just be hard nose and do it exactly they want to do it, keep all the songs for themselves, and they can tell you that worked for them. So I don't know.
There's not one way.
As soon as you say there is a rule in anything,
somebody breaks it.
Yeah. As soon as you say that you have to be you know, Carrie Underwood in order to be a female to get cut or something, or to get a break in this town.
Right.
And it's going to be somebody in a wheelchair or something. I mean, it's,
yeah,
you know, it's, I mean, it's going to be something completely different.
Wow. Okay. So what have we learned? We've learned that we want to go to a
castle. We
want
to go ride in a castle, first of all.
We want to ride in a castle.
Yeah. I probably won't get past the moat, you know.
It's a dry moat. You could probably get past it. They have a dry moat at this particular castle.
Okay.
It never had water in it.
They still wouldn't know.
Yeah. The drawbridge would go up so fast when we kept pulling up.
But they do have like the little they have these little things, the little holes in the rock where
the parapets.
Shoot, what do you call them? I don't know. But they shoot the arrows out of them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they really have those.
Oh, man.
It's not Disneyland. This is a real castle.
A real castle.
The things you've done.
Yeah.
The things you've
done.
And then we didn't even get to time to talk about this, but the last few months we've talked to different people about breaking into the Canadian market and different ways to do it. And you married a Canadian. You're
perfect.
Gosh.
Yeah. She.
And she's wonderful.
Good. I mean, the Canadians are. You know what? I love. They love to buy CDs. They'll still buy CDs.
Yeah.
Especially when you're playing a show.
Really.
That's.
Now
I need to go play there.
Yeah.
Do you still? You had a group there for a while of troubadours where you would tour around.
Yeah, it was just a one tour thing we did. Yeah.
Okay.
And kind of a mixture of Nashville writers and some Canadian writers. Yeah, that was great. That was a lot of fun. And that was with Lisa too.
Yeah. And you're not going to leave her. You're not going to go to Canada and leave her here. That's just not going to happen. So
who,
of course.
Me?
Yeah, you're not. You are not going to go to Canada and
without
and
Lisa.
Oh,
without
no,
Lisa,
no.
That's just not going to happen.
She needs, because I don't know. I can't really speak the language very well.
Right.
I still need to have that translation.
Yeah. So we need to arrange a babysitting swap and get Lisa in here one of these times.
Do you have a babysitter?
Oh, I'll get a babysitter.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, you know.
Lisa she would love to come in here. Yeah,
I would love that.
She's got
That'd
her own
great.
Stories. Yeah.
Bring Ivy. I'll bring a babysitter.
We'll
get it covered.
Ivy will knock your socks off. She can sing Pink Floyd, the Wall. Or,
wow.
That's impressive.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
This has been great. Thank you so much for coming in.
We've had a great time. And hopefully we'll see you playing out and about around town.
He's going to come. He's going to do a whippoorwill with us.
We love that.
I'll
That's going to be awesome. Great. Well, thanks for joining us out there. Go to themusicrowshow.com. You can find out more about who's coming on next and listen to podcasts.
What about your websites? Where can people go?
Go to pauljeffersonmusic.com.
Okay.
Pauljeffersonmusic.com. Pauljeffersonmusic.com.
Sweet. All right, man. Well, in the meantime, before we see you again, go write a song, and we'll see you next week on The Music Row Show.